This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Discuss the age-old question and acquire an approach to it of God's predetermination in conflict with predetermination. There's a Yerushalmi in the third Mishnah of the first Perek of Rosh Hashanah, where the Gemara says, Shodosh Pinkasiyos Heim. There are three books open before the Ribbono Shel Olam on Rosh Hashanah. Achas Shel Tzadikim Gemurim. One book is a book of total Tzadikim. Ve'achas Shel Rishoyim Gemurim. And one book is a book of total Rishoyim. Ve'achas Shel Beinonim. And one is of the middle lot. Ze Shel Tzadikim Gemurim Kva Nitlu Yipovsi Shel Chayim Rosh Hashanah. This is between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Those who are the Tzadikim Gemurim have already been declared fit for life from Rosh Hashanah already. On Rosh Hashanah, the Tzadikim Gemurim, the complete Tzadikim, are judged for life. Zeshol Rishoyim Gemurim, those of the complete Rishoyim, Kvar Notlu Yipufish Shalohim Rosh Hashanah, they also have taken their judgment of death at Rosh Hashanah time. There's no reason to wait. God judges at Rosh Hashanah that they're going to die. The Beinonim, those who are in the middle, have the 10 days of tshuva to do tshuva. Im osu tshuva nichtovim im atzadikim. If they do tshuva, they're written with the tzadikim. Vim lav nichtovim im arushoyim. If they don't do tshuva, they get written with the rishoyim, with the wicked people. Rabbi Hananya chavreyon drabonim boi. Rabbi Hananya, one of the colleagues of the Rabbonin, asked, what do you need 10 days of tshuva for, asks Rabbi Hananya. Ve'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu roye es hanoilot. Does the Ribbono Shel Olam not know what we're going to do? What does he have to wait for? He's sitting on Rosh Hashanah. So the Tzadikim get written off for life. The Rishoyim get written off for death. The Beinonim, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, will wait and see what happens to them. Let's see what they do over the next 10 days. Asks Rabbi Hananya, doesn't the Ribbono Shel Olam know what they're going to do over the next 10 days? What do you have to wait for? If Rosh Hashanah is only the time to judge, you're only holding on for 10 days to give them a chance for tshuva. They've done wrong. You know they've done wrong. So if you know they're going to do tshuva, fine, give them life and close the books and get on with it. And if you know they're not going to do tshuva, pass them for death. And there's no reason to wait the 10 days. What's the game? That's Rabbi Hananya's kasha, which the Gemara answers. We'll deal with the Gemara's answer just now. But the Yosabeach asks, if you're asking that already, then ask further. If you're asking already why the Ribbono Shel Olam has to wait to see whether they do tshuva or not, ask better. Why does he have to judge us at all? If he knows what we're going to do, then what's the whole game about? Then even on Rosh Hashanah he shouldn't judge us. That means you're prepared to say, don't wait until Yom Kippur because you know what they'll do, Ribbono Shel Olam. Well, thank you very much. That means last Rosh Hashanah you also knew what I was going to do this whole year. If you knew what I was going to do the whole year, how can you punish me for it? What choice did I have in the matter? Yet we see that doesn't trouble Rabbi Hananya. That he seems to have an answer for. Now a different question, just about tshuva is his question. So we'll explain that too. Last night we dealt with a piece of Meshech Chochmah. By the way, for those of you who are not familiar, the Meshech Chochmah is a sefer written on the Torah. And it was written at about the turn of the century. The Or Sameach was written a few decades later by the same person. Meshech Chochmah and Or Sameach are the same as the same person. Reb Meir Simcha, who was the Rav of Dvinsk until just before the war, until just before the last war. There are many, many people in South Africa still today who remember Reb Meir Simcha, remember that he came from Dvinsk in Latvia, and they remember Reb Meir Simcha very well. We learned that the Ribbono Shel Olam last night, we learned that the Ribbono Shel Olam says, on the day that you'll cross the Yarden into the land which Hashem will give you, you shall put for yourselves big, established, set up, and you shall cut and engrave the Torah on them. And we noted, where were these stones to be put? Says Rashi, in the river Jordan, nowhere to be put. Which is interesting, because much later on in Yoshua, let's see if I can find it quickly. What parak of Yoshua, Pasuk, Ushtem esrei avonim, and 12 stones, hekim Yoshua betoich hayarden. Yoshua erected in the midst of the Yarden, tachat matzav ragle ha-kohanim, under where the feet of the kohanim were standing, he erected them. Says the Radak, afal pi shaloi ro'inu shetzivohu akel al ele ha-avonim. And we don't see that God told him anywhere to do this. Where did Yeshua get this from, to put the stones there? Achashe also, yodanu ki bevitzo sakel yizborach also. Says the Radak, since Yeshua did it, he must have done it by instruction from God. So we know, although it's not reported, God instructed him. Rashi doesn't learn like that at all. Our Rashi tells us that that's the tzivu here. Where the Rebbe Yishon says, V'hakeimoyso l'cha avonim gedolos, and you shall erect large stones. Where are they to be erected? Says Rashi in our parasha, by Yarden, in the river. That's the tzivu. That's the instruction which Yeshua fulfilled in the fourth parak of Yeshua. Ask the Meshech Chochme. So if the stones are meant to be erected in the river, why doesn't the Torah say explicitly, V'hakeimoyso avonim gedolos by Yarden? Why doesn't he say you must put it in the river? Why does the Torah leave that to our imagination and require us to deduce this, if we're able to, and not say explicitly, you shall put them in the river Jordan? Just says, and you shall erect them. Doesn't tell us where. Rashi tells us it means in the Jordan. Meshech Chochma answered, two principles. The first principle is, you need to know that before Yeshua declared war on any city or on any nation, he gave them the opportunity to make peace. And that's and halacha, it's a din which was given to Moshe. We have to do that. Miracles are performed for a need. Therefore, says the Meshech Chochma, taking those two principles together, Yeshua must have called across the river to the people on the other side and said, do you want to make peace? And they must have answered, no. And if you cross the river, we'll destroy you. Which is why they had to cross the river miraculously. But if they would have said, yes, we're willing to make peace, then they would have thrown bridges over the river, and they would have sent out boats, and they would have helped Am Yisrael cross the river. And the river would never have split. For the splitting of the Yarden was not to impress, the splitting of the Yarden was to facilitate the passage of Bnei Yisrael across the river. Therefore, says the Meshech Chochma, God would have said, you shall erect these stones on the bed of the river Jordan. That would mean that God was telling us, inevitably the river is going to split. There's only one reason for the river to split, and that is because the people on the other side are hostile to you. Which means the people on the other side are going to reject your bid for peace. That can't be stated in the Torah, says the Meshech Chochma, because if that would be stated, they would have no free will. They must have the free will to choose whether they want peace or they want to fight. But if at this stage it would have said in the Torah that in years to come, when you come to the Jordan, you are going to put this on the bed of the river. Because the river is going to split. Why is it going to split? Because they won't accept your bid for peace. That means that they would have no free will. Now, taking that a little bit further, did God know that the river was going to split, or didn't he? Stop playing games. God knew. If God knew, why couldn't he write it in the Torah? The fact is, the river was going to split. The fact is, they were not going to accept the bid for peace. The fact is, they were going to put these stones on the bed of the river. So if it's going to happen, if it's all inevitable, and the Ribbono Shel Olam knows it's inevitable, why can't he write it in? Says the Meshech Chochma, because if he writes it in, then we get to know it. If God knows it, that doesn't deprive the Canaanites of free will. If we know it, it does deprive them of free will. That's what Meshech Chochma says. And that's what we need to analyze, this difference between the Ribbono Shel Olam's knowledge and our knowledge. That if I know something, as we said last night, I know it either because it's already occurred, or I know it because it is occurring, or I know it because it will inevitably recur. But if it is not inevitable, I cannot know it. If it's in the future, and it's not inevitable, I cannot know it. What about God? God can know something, even in the future. Well, if he knows it, it must be inevitable. If it's inevitable, do we have free choice? We must have free choice, otherwise there would be no purpose in the Torah. Well, how does that join together? The inevitability and the free choice don't seem to fit together. Moshe Kochman doesn't explain it here, he leaves it. That's what he says. Let's try and understand the concept a little bit. I said at the end of the year, short shiur, that's in compensation for the fact that it's a very difficult shiur. So all you have to know is that it's difficult only for a short time. So difficult for a short time is probably easier than easy for a long time. The answer, or the explanation that is given by many, starting with Rabbeinu Sadia Goen, Yom Tov brings it in the name of other Rishonim too, is that the question only becomes problematic if we have such a concept as past, present and future. If I tell you I know that Mr. X stole 100 rand yesterday, does that in any way deprive him of free will? No. He stole the 100 rand, that's how I know. He did it first. That doesn't create any philosophic problems for us. If I say I know that Mr. X is stealing 100 rand at the moment, that also doesn't create any philosophic problems for us because I can see him doing it. So how do I know? I know because he's doing it. The only time it becomes a philosophic problem is if I say I know he's going to steal 100 rand. So then we have a problem. How do you know? He says, how do I know? I know. You can't know because it's not inevitable. But the Ribbono Shel Olam can know. But what we've got to understand, says the school of thought, is that the Ribbono Shel Olam's knowing what's going to take place in the future is no different to our knowing what took place in the past or what is taking place in the present. Because in God's will there is no future, past and present. There's just one eternal moment. Everything takes place in the present. Time is something which was created in this world. In the Ribbono Shel Olam's world there's no time. There's no past, there's no future, there's no present. So just as in the past tense you can understand that how do I know because he did it, so in a world where there is no future tense, I can also answer, if you can imagine this for a moment, God says, I know he will do it. How do you know he will do it? Because I see him going to do it. There's no gap between the future and the present. But who gives God that knowledge? My free choice. God gave me the free choice. I can do it if I want to or not do it if I don't want to. I'm going to do it. And therefore God knows I'm going to do it. But in a sense, my choice comes first. Well, not even first, one can put it as simultaneous. Just as if I say, I know that he's stealing 100 rand, how do I know I'm watching him? I can see him. Does that mean he doesn't have free choice? Of course he has free choice. So how do you know? Has he stolen it yet? No, he hasn't stolen it yet. I said he's stealing it. How do you know he's stealing it? I can see. God can see into the future with the same clarity that we can see in the present. Just as we can see things that are happening now, so God can see things which are going to happen tomorrow. And just as seeing it now doesn't mean that you don't have free choice, I can see what you have chosen to do. So God can see what you will choose to do. That's the only difference. Now if we understand that, then Rabbi Hananiah's question becomes a little bit more clear. Ask Rabbi Hananiah, I have no difficulty with the fact that we are judged on Rosh Hashanah, says Rabbi Hananiah, because we have free will. Whatever I did this year, I chose to do, says Rabbi Hananiah, and therefore it is right that I must be judged. I, God, knew what I was going to choose to do. That doesn't matter. I still have the freedom to do it. Just the same as if you see a little baby making his tracks towards the plug with a knitting needle in his hand, you know exactly what he's going to do. And when he does it, you wallop him. How can you? If you knew what kind of free choice did he have, you knew what he was going to choose, that's all. But he had full free choice. So says Rabbi Hananiah, we have full free choice and we are totally responsible for everything we do. But I've done wrong already. I've done an aveira. Now the question is, will I do tshuva? When is the time for judgment? Today is the day of judgment. And you, God, know whether I'm going to do tshuva or not. So why wait? Waiting is only for this world. We need time. You, God, don't need time. For you, past, future and present is all the same. Therefore, says Rabbi Hananiah, as far as you're concerned, Ribbono Shel Olam, there's no reason why you shouldn't judge us on Rosh Hashanah in the knowledge whether or not we're going to do tshuva thereafter. That's Rabbi Hananiah's question.
The action we are responsible for, sure. When it comes to waiting, what do you have to wait for, Ribbono Shel Olam? In your world, there's no time. In your world, there's no past, future, and present. There's no reason for you to wait at all. You can judge immediately. What does the Gemara answer? V'loi shmiya d'omer Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Did Rabbi Hananya not hear what Rabbi Simon said in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu don eso odom elo b'sho'o shehu oimed bo. The Ribbono Shel Olam only judges people in the status in which they find themselves at that time. God doesn't use his knowledge of the future to judge people in the present. My timer, where do we learn this from? Al tiri ki shoma elokim es kol hanar ba'asher husham. When Yishmael was dying of thirst as a young child, and the Ribbono Shel Olam miraculously produced a well of water, the Malachim said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, this Arab who's going to cause such sorrows for the Jews throughout the ages, what are you saving him for? Leave him, let him die. A miracle still? You're bringing a well of water to save him? Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, you and we know that he's going to do for the Jews. That's our knowledge, we know it for sure. But at this stage, is he a tzaddik or a rosha? Right now. Now he's a tzaddik, I've got to do miracles for him. That's how the Ribbono Shel Olam operates. What is the answer? That's the question. We've explained Rabbi Hananya's question. God, you don't need past, future, present tense, you don't have to wait. Answers the Gemara in the name of Rabbi Simon b'shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. No, the Ribbono Shel Olam judges people where they are. Why? The Or Sameach explains the Rambam a little bit more clearly than the Rambam on the surface explains himself. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva asks this question, and he goes straight up. Shema Tzimar, as you might say, V'alo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yodea Kol Ma Sheyiyeh, Kodim Sheyiyeh Yedo Shezeh Yetzarik V'Rosho. After all, God knows before we do anything, whether we're going to be Tzadikim or Roshoim, He knows everything. In that case, how can God punish us or reward us? And either way, if you say that I have choice, then God couldn't have known. If God knew, I don't have choice, the old question. Every modern-day Apikuris thinks he's discovered the question. He doesn't realize, this is the Gemara already dealt with this question. It's a serious question. It's a very difficult question. It's not a question which can just be evaded. But it's no new question. It's nothing that poses unavoidable problems and some insurmountable problems. Answers the Rambam. Da she'tshuvas she'ila zu arucho me'eretz mido rechovo mineyom. The answer to this question is longer than the length of the universe and wider than the sea. Bekamo ikrim gedolim v'harorim ramim tuluyim bo, and major principles and great mountains depend on this. Aval torich ato leido ulahavin bedova zeshani oimer. All you need is the following. So, this is what you need to know. And this is not in the Mura Nevuchim, this is in the Sefer Halacha, in Hilchos Tshuva. That means we need to know these things. Kam Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur time. We need this. What is it? We've already explained in the second parak of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, Shakadosh Baruch Hu Eino Yodea Mideo Shehi Chutz Mimenu Kibnei Odom Shehim Vedaitum Shnai. God's knowledge is not external to himself. Whatever that means, difficult to understand, what does it mean? That's what he says. A human being's knowledge is outside of himself. There's me and my knowledge. They're separable. I didn't know it yesterday. I acquired the knowledge today, and I can forget it again tomorrow. So then my knowledge and me are separable. Not so with Ribbono Shel Olam. Ela hu yisal eshmoi v'da'atoi echot. He and his knowledge are one. V'ein da'atoi shel odom yecheilo lahasik dova zeh al burio. And no human being can fully perceive this. So the Ravid criticizes the Rambam and says, what kind of business is this? You ask questions and then you give half answers. Rather don't ask the question. Well, why make people worry about things that you can't answer? There was some answers, Chas v'Sholom, that the Rambam can't answer. This is the answer. The Rambam has answered. What's his answer? Says the Osamech is unhappy with the answer of Reb Sadia Goin. Nobody says the answer of Reb Sadia Goin, that God can see the future just as we see the present. And just as I can see him stealing 100 rand, but that doesn't mean that he's got no free will. the fact that I know he's stealing 100 rand is only because he's chosen to do so. So the fact that God knows that I'm going to do wrong tomorrow is only because I will have chosen to have done so. But I chose. It's just that God can see the future the same as the present.
I'll spill some out, but still, at the end of the day, I'm standing now, about to do an aveira. So I'm going to ask myself, does God know I'm going to do it or doesn't he?
At that point, you've got the question. And with all the fancy answers, it just doesn't help. At that point, when I'm about to do wrong, and I ask, does God know or doesn't he, you must say, yes, God does know.
Oh, if God knows, then I can't disappoint him. I can't go and prove God to be ignorant and incorrect. That's where you have the difficulty, says the Rosamath. And all the philosophic answers don't help. And he spends pages and pages and pages showing that one after another, they don't really answer the question. And therefore the Rosamath says that the Rambam is the one who really answers the question. What does the Rambam say? God and his knowledge is one, not separable. It doesn't bother us that we can't understand the Ribbono Shel Olam, because the Ribbono Shel Olam defies definition. We don't have sufficient intellect to be able to define the Ribbono Shel Olam. You can only define something which is smaller in magnitude than your own intellect. It's not possible to define something which is bigger. You can experience something which is bigger. You can be exposed to something which is bigger than your own intellect. But you cannot define something which is bigger than you can see. It's not possible. Just as you can't define in your visual sense something more than you can see, so in your intellectual sense you cannot define a concept which is bigger than your mind is able to grasp, because you can't see the ends of it. You can only definition means it goes from there to there. And the same as visually I can see that this room goes from there to there because I can see. However, if I look out at the sea, I can't say it goes from here to there. I don't know. I can't see. But because I'm able to study geography, I'm able to define the length of a mile, and I can say that this ocean continues another 2,500 miles in this direction and another 4,000 miles in this direction. Not because I can see, but because I know. The geography of the world is not bigger than my mind. My mind is bigger than the geography of the world. I can allocate limits to these geographical concepts, because my mind can handle these limits. But when it comes to the infinite, I cannot give it limits. It's beyond me. I cannot see with my mind, never mind with my senses. The cleverest person is unable to perceive with his intellect where God starts and where God finishes. It's infinite, you can't. And therefore, says the Rambam, the knowledge, God's knowledge and God are one, not separable. And therefore, just as God is bigger than anything we can conceive of, so his knowledge is bigger than anything we can conceive of. He doesn't know the same way as we know. It's a completely different kind of machshavah. Ein machshavoy sai, machshavoy seichem. Ein drochai darkeichem. My thoughts are not your thoughts. My ways are not your ways. It's a different measure altogether. You work in finite terms. I work in infinite terms. And the finite cannot understand the infinite. It's not possible. The Osamath gives examples from geometry, which we're discussing at Shalashudas. It's very easy for us to measure the circumference of a circle. We can measure it and we can know exactly what the circumference of the circle is. And it's very easy for us to measure the diameter of the circle also. We can measure it exactly. But when it comes to dividing the circumference by the diameter, we can't figure it out. It's impossible to calculate. There's no way that it's possible to reach an answer. That's the concept of an irrational number. A number which goes on and on. It's an infinite number. It doesn't end. There's no end to the calculation. Dr. Sider told me this afternoon that they set a computer up for 3 days calculating pi, and it just carried on and on and on and on and on. After 3 days of generating figures, not only didn't it get to the end, of course, but it didn't even get to a recurring figure. Now, figure after figure, there's no end to it. Why doesn't that bother mathematicians? You'll find a mathematician who's quite willing to live with that. That I cannot, I do not have the capacity. Actually, that's incorrect. It's not that he doesn't have the capacity to measure the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference. It's not that he doesn't have the capacity. It's that ratio defies definition. It's not because he's not clever. It's not because he's lacking something.
That ratio defies definition. Can't be defined. It's too big. And that he can live with. But if he asks a question like this on the Ribbono Shel Olam, all of a sudden he can't live with it. Ask the Rosh Hashanah, what's the difference? All you've come across is something which defies definition. It's too infinite. It cannot be defined. You cannot put an end to it and say, this is where it ends. And therefore it's beyond you. And the same is with the relationship of a diagonal to a square. Also cannot be calculated. That ratio, the size of the square divided by the diagonal, also cannot be calculated to the end. Also carries on infinitely. And I think there's a limit in that. We stand outside the square. If you're standing outside the square, then it's easy to measure the square and the diagonal, whatever you want. But when you're looking at the relationship of the inside to the outside, that a human being can't, nobody can work that out. Because the inside is unable to grasp, so to say, the parameters of the outside. That relationship is infinite. When you're looking at something which is bigger than you, you have no way of calculating. Imagine that what we're really saying is that the diameter is trying to measure its relationship to the circumference. Okay. It has a problem, it can't. What is the circumference in relation to me? The answer is it can't be calculated. What is the diagonal says? What is my relationship to the square around me? Can't be calculated. You can't calculate your relationship to that which envelops you, to that which surrounds you totally. Can't do it. You're smaller than it. And that's why we call the Ribbono Shel Olam Hamokom. We call him the place. We're in him, not him in us. When you define, then you try and think of yourself as the place. And this is inside you, so you want to define how much space does it take up. We call the Ribbono Shel Olam Hamokom because it's exactly the other way around. We're the ones inside. He's outside. He surrounds us. He envelops us, not us enveloping him. And just therefore, as the diameter can't understand its relationship to the circumference, and the diagonal can't understand its relationship to the sides of the square, so we, pictorially, if you look at the same kind of picture, that's where we are. We're the inside. And we can go from one end to the other. But we can't get out of Hamokum. Out of the Ribbono Shel Olam's grasp, we can't get. So we can stretch from one side to the other. And now we want to try and understand our relationship to him and his relationship to us. It defies measurement. It can't be understood. That, says the Olam Hamokum, is what the Rambam means. And we've just got to accept that when you're looking at the relationship of something beyond you to you, it's not possible to measure it. It's not possible to grasp it. So don't worry about it, says the Osama. That's what the Rambam is saying. No need to worry about it. You're worrying about something. It's like worrying about what the accurate measurement is of pi or of any irrational number which cannot be calculated to its last decimal point. No need to worry about it. It cannot be calculated. Finished. That is its nature. You need something which is bigger than you. And therefore you don't even have to come onto this past, present and future. Now I can say very simply and I can sleep at night. I'm about to do an Aveiro. Does God know I'm going to do it? Yes. Have I free choice? Yes. What's the relationship of one to the other? What's the relationship of the diameter of the circle to the circumference? Can you tell me that? Even that you can't answer. What you're trying to answer these questions for? You are not capable of working that out. Because if you'll work that out, you'll be working the Ribbono Shel Olam out. Because him and his knowledge is one. That is God. That is the Ribbono Shel Olam. You've touched on the essence of what the Ribbono Shel Olam is, that undefinable, that indefinable aspect, that which is infinite, that which cannot be defined. You cannot bring these two ends together. You cannot bring them together. If you had infinite knowledge, you would be able to do it, but you don't have infinite knowledge. And therefore, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Donos HaOlam Elo B'Sha'a Shehu Omed Bo. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm judging him now. I know what he's going to do tomorrow, but that doesn't affect my judgment of him now. I'm judging him where he stands now, not where he's going to be tomorrow. And that's the difference. When a human being knows what's going to happen, if I say I know he's going to steal 100 rand tomorrow, is it inevitable? If it's not inevitable, how do I know? For a human being, that's a good kasha. For a human being, that's a good question, because we're working in finite concepts. Everything must be measurable. You're entitled to say, how do you know? And I must be able to answer you in a logical and clear way. But with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that can't be done. Is he going to steal tomorrow? The Ribbono Shel Olam knows the answer to that question. Does that leave him free to steal or not steal as he chooses? Yes, it does. What's the relationship of one to the other? Indefinable. One cannot put a quantity on it. The Meshech Chochmah in the beginning of Shmos goes on to ask another fascinating question. The Torah says, the Ribbono Shel Olam says about Moshe Rabbeinu, Uvecho Ya'aminu Le'olam, and in you they will believe forever. Ask the Meshech Chochmah, how can God say such a thing? Now it's not God's knowledge. God has now written it in the Torah. It's become a mitzvah. So now we can compare this to what would have been the case had the Ribbono Shel Olam said, place those stones at the bottom of the River Jordan. It's now a mitzvah in the Torah. If it's a mitzvah in the Torah, it's inevitable. It has to take place. That means, you shall believe in Moshe Rabbeinu forever. What happens if Moshe Rabbeinu, chas v'sholem, later on decided to become a reform rabbi? So, are you going to say he couldn't have? So where's his free will? Could he have? Then how can the Ribbono Shel Olam give us an instruction that come what may, you shall believe him and follow him? If the Ribbono Shel Olam gives us such an instruction, that means that God knows, not only does God know that he won't switch allegiances and that he won't make a mistake, that God knows it is not a kasha. We've dealt with that already. God can know it and still he's got free will. But the moment the Ribbono Shel Olam writes it in the Torah, that deprives him of free will. Now what do you do with it? Asks the Meshech Chochmah. Answers the Meshech Chochmah, Moshe had no free will. It's clear from that Moshe had no free will. In that case, what was the point of his life? Explains the Meshech Chochmah. Why did he have no free will? Because he reached the level where he could perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam with sufficient clarity to make the choice to do wrong an absurd choice. Absolutely absurd. Does a human being have free will to jump into a furnace of fire voluntarily? Of course he has free will. So take 1 million human beings and light a big furnace and see how many are going to jump in. Now what kind of free will is it if you won't even find 1 in 1 million who do it? Is that called free will? Take 10 million, take 100 million. You won't find 1 in 100 million who jump into the furnace. So what kind of free will is it? The answer is they have free will, yes, but they really don't have free will. They perceive the danger of the fire with sufficient clarity to know not to do it. And the Yetzirah goes, there's no Yetzirah for it. A moth has a Yetzirah to fly into a fire. A human being doesn't have such a Yetzirah. Even on a freezing cold day, no human being has a Yetzirah to jump into a fire. Why is that? What's going on there? Why does a human being has no Yetzirah to jump into a fire? That doesn't mean that he has no Bechir. In a sense, it doesn't mean that he has no Bechir. Explains the Meshech Chochmah. Moshe Rabbeinu worked upon himself to such a level where his clarity of vision reached the point that there was no question of doing wrong. It wasn't an option. But that would have been absurd. And that is the ultimate of creation. To rid yourself of your free will. Not to have it as a gift that you have no free will. That's an animal. Or it's an angel. A human being is born with free will and goes through a process of achieving such clarity ultimately that he no longer has free will. But it's self-achieved. He's done it through working on himself. This is not something he's been given. And so B'nai Yisrael were standing at Sinai, says the Meshech Chochmah. They also had no free will. Kofa Aleihem Harkigigis, the Ribbono Shel Olam, so to say, held the mountain over them and said, you jolly well accept the Torah. What does that mean? They saw the Ribbono Shel Olam with such clarity, there was no option not to accept the Torah. Of course they were going to accept. But straight after Matan Torah, that free will was given back to them again. It hadn't been achieved. It had been granted to them. For no other way would they be able to perceive the truth of Torah with absolute clarity. And so temporarily, God deprived them of free will and gave it back to them after Matan Torah. Not so Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe stripped himself of any physical involvement, whatever. He didn't belong in the physical world after that at all. That's why he didn't go back to married life afterwards. Moshe Rabbeinu, through his own efforts, had raised himself to the point where there was no choice, there was no issue, there was nothing to choose from. He was beyond that. We don't have time for the rest of the shir. Suffice it to say that element that Moshe Rabbeinu achieved explains the Meshech Chochmah Yeshua achieved as well. And it's possible, in theory, for any human being to achieve it, as the Rambam says, that any person can become a tzaddik k'moshe Rabbeinu. It's possible for a human being to achieve that type of level of tzidkus. Yet, Chazal say, when they want to give an example of somebody saying, I can't believe, I cannot accept what you're saying, no matter who you are, no matter what authority, I can't accept it. The Loshon Chazal says, even if he was Yeshua ben Nun, he told me I wouldn't accept it. Points out the Beis Yosef. It doesn't say, even if he was Moshe Rabbeinu, I wouldn't accept it. So you see from there, there's a difference between Yeshua and Moshe Rabbeinu. That although Yeshua also had reached this level where nothing was, where free choice didn't exist anymore, the clarity of the vision of the Ribbono Shel Olam and his Torah was such that it compelled him to do good. Yet, on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, he wasn't. And for that reason, the Rambam says about the Mashiach, in fact, that when Mashiach comes, the Novi Godol Hu, the Mashiach will be a great Novi, a great prophet, Koroiv L'Moshe Rabbeinu, close to Moshe, but not Moshe. Moshe had an element which nobody else had. And it was that element which enabled Moshe Rabbeinu to split the sea. It was that element which enabled Moshe to do several of the miracles which he did. And one of the questions the Meshech Chochma deals with is, in that case, what about Yeshua? He split the Jordan. And the answer is, and with this we will conclude, the Tanakh in Yeshua, in that same Perek, in order that this should be a sign among you, if your sons ask you tomorrow saying, what are these stones to you? These same stones that we read about in our parsha. You shall say to them, they result from the cutting off of the water of the Yarden. Why did the waters cut off? Because of the ark of the Bris of Hashem. Not because of Yeshua. With the Meshech Chochma, that was the difference. Moshe Rabbeinu was synonymous with Torah. Just as the Rambam says that God and his knowledge are one, it's not separate, so in a sense, Moshe Rabbeinu and Torah achieved a oneness. And that's why we call it Zichru Torah's Moshe, we call it the Torah of Moshe. He has a certain ownership on it. It's him, it is. The Torah is Moshe, and Moshe is the Torah. That was never achieved by anybody else and will never be achieved by anybody else. And that's why we need to remind our children, when the waters split, they split for the Torah. They didn't split for Yeshua. In Moshe's time, they split for Moshe, because Moshe and the Torah is one. But after that time, never again. Then it's for Torah, not for Yeshua. And in fact, that's how it worked. But as long as the Kohanim stood there holding the Aron, the waters were separate. They only came together again after the Aron was removed, not after Klal Yisrael had crossed. After the Aron had moved back onto dry land, then the river closed up again. And so what we have here is a concept, yes, there is such a thing as a tzaddik who gets to the level where even a Yetzirah he doesn't have. Not because he never had a Yetzirah, but through years and years of Avodas Hashem, he's able to perceive the Ribbono Shel Olam and his Torah with such clarity that the option to do evil is not an option at all.